Our main speaker tonight is Nancy.
Thanks. Hi, everybody. I'm Nancy, and I am an alcoholic. Whoa. I've been coming to AG for a long time, and it's pretty crazy standing up here right now. It's quite an honor to speak at any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's really nice to be standing up here. And I want to welcome all the newcomers. I cannot believe, you know, we stood up for a minute to look over because it was kind of hard to see over the piano. And I can't believe how many people were here that are new, you know, and I want to welcome you. I want to welcome you to the greatest moment of your life. And I want to welcome you home. And I want to welcome you to a safe place. I want to welcome you somewhere where you do not have to be alone anymore. I want to welcome you somewhere where you can feel okay. I want to welcome you somewhere where you don't have to feel afraid. I want to welcome you somewhere where if you do feel any of those feelings, any one of us in this room can help you. And I say that from the bottom of my heart. And when you feel any of those feelings, remember that we all felt that way at one time. That we all walked in here knowing that we were scared, that we felt helpless, that we felt alone, that we felt that fear, that we felt that insecurity, that we felt that, what am I doing here? Am I really an alcoholic? Am I really like you people? Am I really one of you? Am I really a loser? Or am I really not like you? Am I really that bad? You know, we play it the other way. We can go the opposite. We can go, I'm not really that bad. I only drank once in a while. Well, I can honestly tell you that people that didn't have a problem with alcohol don't end up in Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't just all of a sudden say, you know what? I don't really have anything to do today. I think I'm going to go to AA. I feel like going to an AA meeting. The library, there was nothing going on there. I didn't feel like going to Starbucks. I don't feel like going to work today. I don't have anything going on. So I'm going to go to AA because I have nothing to do. And I heard we're in a nice church right now, but we all know some of the meetings, pretty dank, you know. You're sitting in a basement and they smell. They're a little moldy. It's kind of like, hey, when was the last time it was clean down here? They're dark. No offense. You know, I feel bad saying that now. But, you know, we know, like, did I really choose to be sitting in that AA meeting? Not really. I think there's a temple. I forget which one, where they have like cushion seats. And it's really nice going to that temple because it's a nice meeting. It's like, oh, this is nice, the cushion seats, it's comfortable. But not all AA meetings are like that. You know, some meetings are really, it's pretty crazy sitting in there. And what is said in AA meeting, it's pretty crazy what's said in there. And what we talk about in an AA meeting, it's pretty crazy what's said in there. So I know for me, I didn't just raise my hand and decide, hey, I'm going to AA and I'm going to get sober. But what happened in my life, this is where I ended up. And this isn't like the end of the road. And that's why I'm saying right off the rip, welcome. Because a lot of you, me, I could relapse and I could die. And this is a serious disease. And there will be people that will die from this disease because this disease kills. This disease takes away lives. This disease tells you, I don't have a disease. I can go and have a drink. And I don't want that. So what do? I sit in those dirty, dank meetings that smell like the mold, you know. I sit in the meeting when I don't want to sit in a meeting. And where I come from, alcohol was a part of my life. Alcohol was accepted. It didn't matter where my family came from. It didn't matter, you know, what church my parents went to. It didn't matter what country my grandparents were from. It didn't matter. You know, me personally, I love the taste of booze. I loved it. I don't understand when people say, I held my nose when I had my first drink. Why? Why? It tasted so good, no matter what it was. I love that warm, tingly feeling. I loved what it made me feel. I loved how it felt in my cheeks. I loved how it felt going down my throat. I loved how it felt going down my esophagus. I loved how it felt in my stomach. You know, I love that feeling. I loved the way it made me feel. And when I was 6 years old, I loved the way it made me feel. You know, sitting at the dinner table with my family, we had the kids' table, we had the adult table. And we had the little shot glasses, and my parents would pour us the little drinks and the pretty glasses with the little purple flowers on it. And that's how we first started drinking. And then as we got older, my father would say, you know, come over here, you want a sip of Daddy's Rheingold? And we had a sip of Daddy's beer. And then it was just such a part of my life. It was a part of my family. We had a summer house. Both of my parents were from the Bronx. And my parents ended up buying a house. We would summer in East Durham. And my aunt and uncle had a resort up there. And we'd go to this resort. And my parents were like, we want to buy a house up here. So we had a house in the country. And we would go up there and we'd be in these bars. And, you know, my sister and I learned at a very young age how to, like, hustle. You know, we learned, like, how to get that drink from the man in the bar. And if we had that drink, we'd do, like, a little Irish step dance. And he'd say, okay, you know, you want some money for the jukebox? Give us a little dance there, girls. And my sister and I would do a little dance and we'd jump around and we'd get some money for the jukebox. And we'd get some money for the pinball machine. And we'd be doing our thing. And I love that. I loved being in the bar. I love the excitement. I love the action. I loved everything about it. I love the way my father commanded that presence. I loved when you walked in and you told the bartender, you know, I want a martini straight up with a twist, and you got what you wanted. You know, we went to the games in the South Bronx, and you know, and the whole, like, everything that went along with it. My father worked down on Wall Street, and you know, my father was like working class but business class. You know, I learned, I was the oldest of three kids, I learned how to shoot guns, but I also, you know, I learned about money, so I, you know, the best of both worlds. You know, I had an excellent upbringing. I got beat up once in a while, a little violent household, but I had a good upbringing. But the alcohol was there. The alcohol was there. And for me, I didn't see anything wrong with it. I didn't see anything wrong with it. I thought this was okay. This was normal. That everybody else's family grew up like my family. Until I got older. And now I'm in school. You know, I'm in like 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old. And I'm seeing that not everybody's like this. Not everybody is in sixth grade and drinking, you know? Not everybody's in sixth grade and, like, getting on the school bus and being like, hey, who wants, you know, Bloody Marys in the morning? Because I see this is what my family does. I don't know, just, like, what's the difference? Have some orange juice and vodka, you know, getting on the bus. This isn't how you do things. So now, you know, time's going on. I'm in junior high. I'm you know, I'm drinking. I'm in high school. I'm drinking. And I slowly go from that girl. I go from that girl who was doing everything. I was involved in Irish step dancing. I was involved in soccer. I was involved in Little League. I had it all. I loved doing everything. I had what I thought was this great life. This great life. And then I started drinking more. And I didn't really care. I didn't want to study anymore. I didn't want to be that high honor roll student. Why do I want to study? Who cares about college? Who cares about sitting after school and studying? Who cares about, you know, going to these great colleges anymore? I wanna go to the college that's closest to the Canadian border, because now the drinking age there is 18. And that's a SUNY school. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a SUNY school. It's a great system. But that's where I wanted to go, because now I don't have any goals anymore. So I went from straight A high honor roll student to knocking on your door when I was 14 years old and telling you that I'm collecting money for the jump rope-a-thon, and I'm not collecting money for the jump rope-a-thon. I'm putting it in my pocket and I'm going to the Roxy, the fun house, the tunnel in the city and having a good time. You know, and this is like what was going on. I grew up in Seaford on Long Island, and I was hanging out on Jamaica Ave wanting to be with Run-DMC and Hollis Queens. You know, I was like in the Rocksteady crew. The white girl, the only white girl in the Rocksteady crew. And, you know, people who know the Rocksteady crew know what's up. Maybe some of you guys don't know what I'm talking about. That's okay. Go rent Beach Street and, you know, and then you'll know. You'll have an idea what I'm talking about. You know, I originally am from the Boogie Down, so I was going back to my roots, but this is what, you know, this is what was going on. This is what was going on. And, you know, this was the life that I was having. I was getting on the Long Island Railroad. Like I was 15 years old, riding the trains, get on the Long Island Railroad, on the subway, going up to the Bronx. Like, are you kidding me? I look at these kids today. I look at these kids today, like, seriously? But this is what I was doing. And I wore my big sheepskin coat, and I had just chugs of booze in it. And it was crazy. It was crazy what we were doing. And I didn't care. I was robbing you blind. I had so many rackets going at 15 years old. It was insane. And my parents had no idea. We were the latchkey kids. My mother was a nurse. My father was a banker. My parents were never home. My mother went back to school, and she literally would work nights, and she would drive down the street. And as soon as she got down the block, we would have a party. Like, she worked, she went to school at 4 o'clock. She'd be down the block and we'd have a party at the house. Like, 2 minutes, come on, kids. You know, like, come on, let's go. Like, I had no respect for my parents' home. Nothing. I didn't care about your house, my parents' house. I didn't care about anybody's home. You know, when we were younger, like 13, babysitting, I stole everything, and then we'd call the cops and say we got robbed. Yeah, I mean, it was insane. It was totally insane. I don't know where I lost the value and ethics of what I grew up with. It went out the window. Because at 13, I don't have any money to buy booze, you know, and the alcoholism started young. At 7, 8 years old, I'd steal money from my parents. It'd be hidden in my sock drawer, and I'd say, I don't know where it went. This poor kid, we had a kid from Project Children from Northern Ireland, this like tough kid, come and stay with us. And I blamed him for all this money that was stolen from my parents. I'm like, it must have been the kid from Project Children, Mom. I don't know where the money went. You know, and meanwhile, I stole it. You know, I had to make amends to my father and say, it was me, Dad. You know, and all along, he had a feeling it was me. This poor, like, innocent kid from Project Children, he's like, what kind of house did I move into here? You know, and meanwhile, I was the thief. He's like the nice kid from Project Children. So, you know, here I am, like, just always running and running and running and running and running. So at 15 years old, I had gotten in trouble and I had really gotten in trouble and I was on probation and, you know, I had this thing called the PINS petition on me, which is person in need of supervision, where the courts basically take over you now. No more parents, no more nothing, and if you get in trouble, like, that's it. And I had a probation officer, she'd come to the school, and, you know, in school I was like this good kid to a degree, but, you know, on the outside I was like crazy. I was this EDP, psycho, crazy girl. So now, you know, the time is going on, and, you know, I'm on probation, and I barely graduated high school by the skin of my teeth, and I remember it was like the summer right before I'm supposed to go away to college, and I save up all this money, right? I save up all this money because I need my partying money to go away to college with. And that summer, I drank it all away, like done, gone. And it was August, and I'm supposed to go away to school, and my mother says, listen, you drank away all your money. I'm not paying for you spending money. It's not happening, Nancy. And I said, all right, you know, what do you think I should do? She said, well, you're going to the local community college. What do you mean, what do you think I should do? She said, you're going to have to take the entrance exam. I said, all right, you know, and I'm like not taking anything serious at all. So I take the local entrance exam, wasted, like completely wasted, and I just check off anything. So, of course, I end up in the remedial classes. So I'm sitting there with a high IQ in the remedial classes, and you know, I'm like, this isn't for me, and I slowly drop out. And to like compensate for what was going on in my life, I was working three jobs, and the three jobs all involved booze. One was in a bar, one was working for an alcohol. I mean, it was all just craziness. So one night it was snowing out, and it was football season. You know, I remember it was Monday Night Football, and it was snowing out, And I remember I was working in the bar and I go over to the payphone and I'm calling my friends and I'm like, hey, come up to the bar, let's go. And they're like, are you kidding me? It's snowing. I'm not coming to the bar, Nancy. I said, all right, you guys, you know, you stink, whatever. So I keep drinking. And then I was like smart enough to go outside and start my 77 Chevy Nova with the bucket seat. And I go outside and I start the car and I go back and I take another drink and then I go back outside again and I proceed to get into the vehicle and I drive drunk. And it wasn't the first time. I was that girl that people would say, I want to drive with you because you drive drunk so good. Well, you know, this time was the same. And I proceeded to get on the highway, you know, like this, driving, one eye covering the other eye. And my father is a volunteer firefighter. And back then they have these little pager things and it says, you know, it doesn't say my name. It doesn't say Nancy so-and-so. It just says car accident, where the accident is, blah, blah, blah. And my father gets out of bed at 1 o'clock in the morning and responds to this call and doesn't know it's me and proceeds to get on the ambulance, get on the fire truck, go with the boys, and gets there and sees me. And I'm laying in the back of the ambulance and I'm wasted, like wasted beyond wasted. And I vaguely remember the accident. I remember the vehicle that I was in, the bucket seat. It had folded, and I got thrown, and, you know, they pulled me out, and I was in the back of the ambulance, and I was belligerent, and like, you know, get me out of here, you know, rude, drunk, nasty. And my father comes in the back of the ambulance and he opens the door and he shut it. He shut it. He couldn't even look at me. Like I said, I'm the oldest of three kids. I grew up in the lifestyle that I did, but I was my father's little girl. My parents did what they did, but the relationship that I had with my dad, my father shot guns, I shot a gun. My father spackled, I was taught to spackle. You know, it just, that's how it was in my house. And I let this, you know, where did I go? Where did I go? Who was I now? Who was this girl? So I literally, 2 days later, said, I'm going to AA. I knew about Alcoholics Anonymous from a friend of mine that we thought went to the loony bin. She went to this rehab called South Oaks on Long Island. And I grew up a couple of towns away from it. And I thought South Oaks was a loony bin. It's not a loony bin. It's a rehab. And it's an excellent rehab. And there's millions of rehabs. But when you're 19 years old and your friend, like, goes away, you think she's going to the loony bin. So my friend went to rehab and comes out with this big, long checklist. And I was right there with her. You know, this was the running buddy. This was the girl I did everything with. And I saw the checklist, and I knew in the back of my mind that this is not the way I'm supposed to be living my life. It should not be like this. But I was in denial. I wasn't ready. Who knows? But when I got that DWI, and I had the handcuffs on me, and I was in that jail cell, and I'm walking around, and I'm thinking, why aren't these lawyers looking at me? I look pretty good. And I was disgusting. And in the back of my mind, I knew I felt disgusting. And for the first time ever, my mother said to me, Nancy, you have a problem with alcohol. I sat on my couch. I went home. I slept for like 40 hours. I said, take me to that meeting at St. William's, Mom. And I sat at that beginner's meeting. And, you know, like they could have been speaking Chinese. And they said, is anybody here for the first time? And somehow I raised my hand. And I said, hi, I'm Nancy. And I don't know if I said I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what I said. But after the meeting, what felt like thousands, probably was only about five people, came up to me after. And they gave me the big book, meeting list, step books, this. But through the crowd, I saw a kid I grew up with. And he said to me, listen, Nancy, tomorrow night there's a really good meeting. We're going to come and pick you up. And I was like, whoa, no. I don't know if this is really for me. I don't think so. And he said, you know what? We're just going to come and get you and see how it is. And they came and got me. January 10th, 1990. That's my sobriety date. And for the grace of God, I haven't had a drink since then. I stood in my home group a week ago. We celebrate anniversaries at the end of the month. I've had the same home group since. I've traveled all over the world and attended Alcoholics Anonymous. If you are bored in AA, there is something wrong with you. I can honestly say that. Honestly. And especially, how lucky are we to live here? I live in Long Beach. We were affected by the hurricane. I'm a volunteer firefighter. I can tell you story after story after story. I used to work on the ambulance up in Washington Heights, story after story after story. I had two lumps in my breast, story after, you know, the list goes on. I'm sober 23 years. Obviously, I have a list. Drinking? No. The steps? God, my sponsor. You know, I can honestly say there's so many things that have come up in my life that people would say, wow, you're really going through a lot right now, huh? Yeah, I am. And so are you. And I've watched you not drink. And I've watched so many people strive through tremendous things in their lives. I've watched men and women come into Alcoholics Anonymous and think that they cannot do something, and they can. And they can. We promise you, as a direct result, we promise you. How, like, who else is going to promise you something like that? It's so simple. And that's why I say, like, to all the newcomers in here, if you don't understand, ask somebody. You know, we all might look like, hey, this is great. But you know what? At sometimes, this isn't so great. This really isn't so great. When I found out I had two lumps in my breast and I thought I was going to die, I didn't. I'm here. That was 5 years ago. I quit smoking 2 days after that because I thought, if I'm going to die from breast cancer, why am I going to kill myself with this? Okay? I talked about it. I said to my sponsor, I'm scared. Now, I have to talk about it. I have to talk about it. So if you're going through something, the biggest thing that I've gotten over the years that I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is talking about it. Be a part of AA. Help a newcomer. That's so great. Like, what other program tells you, if you're not feeling good, do something for somebody else to get out of yourself? And it works. Especially here in New York City. Like, I got sober. It was fun. We'd go to the meetings in the Hamptons. We'd go to meetings in the Bronx. We'd get on the train. We'd go everywhere. I mean, a lot of times it was to meet boys, which, you know, sometimes worked, sometimes didn't. And it was fun. And this group is awesome because there's always stuff going on. There's always stuff happening. So like I said, if you're bored in Alcoholics Anonymous, take a look at you. And I'm not saying that like as a dig. I'm saying that as take a look at you as maybe try and change it up a little bit. And try and reach out to somebody. Because I know for me, when I'm helping somebody, it's getting me out of myself. So I want to welcome all the newcomers. I want to welcome, I couldn't really hear, but I think there's somebody here from Australia. That's amazing. You know, like I said, I go to meetings whenever I travel. I travel a lot for work. So AA is everywhere. Thank you, everybody.